A young Jewish woman from Holland, Etty Hillesum, perished in a concentration camp during Nazi Germany in her 20s. Before she was murdered, she shared her wisdom with us through her writings, and at seminary, I had the privilege of reading her work. She writes, "First and foremost, you must listen to your own rhythm and try to live in accordance with it. Be attentive to what emerges from deep down. Often our actions are only imitations, fulfillment of an assumption of duty, or a reflection of what we believe a human being should be. But the only certainty," she writes, "the only certainty we have about our life and our deeds can only spring from the very depth of our being." So I spent the last few weeks tuning into the depth of my being, wondering about the balance between the internal life and the external life. How can we, as Hillesum invites us, ensure that our actions are not only imitations, fulfillment of an assumption of duty or a reflection of what we believe a human being should be? How can we allow our deeds to spring from the very depth of our being? I believe as Unitarian Universalists, we have to find a balance, or the spiritual sweet spot, as I like to call it, between the deeds that we do out in the world and our inner life. The calling to our work in the world is often found in the deepest parts of ourselves, and one has to feed the other so that we bring greater consciousness and healing to our justice work, as well as a call to justice sprung from our inner life. In his book, The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible, which is one of my absolute favorite books that I read this summer and I recommend to anybody, Charles Eisenstein writes, "Spiritual work is political if it spreads love, connection, forgiveness, acceptance, and healing. To work on the self, it is necessary to work in the world. And to work in the world, it is necessary to work on the self," he writes. So to nurture my development as a minister, one of the things I did on study leave this summer was to work on myself by undertaking another silent retreat. Now, I needed space to listen to my own rhythm and inner voice, as Etty Hillesum recommends, to fuel my outer work. And as the theologian Parker Palmer said in the reading we heard earlier, the soul is like a shy, wild animal that sometimes can only venture forth in silence. But he tells us, in a quiet space, we are freed to hear our own truth, touch what brings us joy, become self-critical about our faults, and take risky steps toward change. Now, unlike last summer's silent retreat, I decided not to take the risky step of fasting for 3 days this time. I was kind of done with that growth opportunity, truth be told. But there were still plenty of other lessons to learn in the silence, however. Entering into complete quiet for 3 days with no internet or phone connectivity, nothing to schedule, nobody to answer to, brings me into a place of mindfulness and interconnectedness that's hard to find during the year anywhere else. So the first thing I noticed when I arrived at the Benedictine monastery was how speedy I felt on the inside. My mind was chattering nonstop and my heart was racing. And this, my friends, was coming off vacation. But it wasn't a vacation away from noise and stimulation. I was at home with all its attendant cacophony. The news, NPR, our crazy politics, email, the internet, and the newspaper. And then there's my lovely family, a sick dog, the dishes, cooking experiments, laundry, major closets and clutter that had to be cleaned, and so many other things I had to do. And as Parker Palmer suggests, under these conditions, the intellect, emotions, will, and ego may emerge, but not the soul. We scare off all the soulful things like respectful relationships, goodwill, and hope. And I'll attest to the fact that my husband said, "You were so nice to me during your vacation." It's because there was more time for good things to emerge. Now, instead, like most communities, we were crashing through the woods together, scaring the soul away. And by the soul, I understand a deep inner space, the place of wisdom and inner knowing. And I invite you, if you have difficulty with that concept, to translate the idea to whatever word works for you, your deep inner knowing. So it took me a few hours and a long walk and some deep breathing and meditation to start acclimatizing myself to the pace of silence. The pace of silence. It's so much slower. It waits for us to pause, to quiet down, to calm our racing hearts and minds, to breathe more deeply and go within. It sets the stage for meditation, reflection, and inspiration. Silence allows us to hear our inner wisdom, to become aware of each moment in a different, more profound way. The pace of silence. And with silence as my backdrop that first night, I was able to read half a book. And in fact, because of the lack of distraction and quiet, I could also accomplish so much more. By the end of my time there, I'd read 3 books, written 1.5 sermons, planned worship for the next few months, and created a new curriculum. Not shabby for 3 days. Plus, I went for walks, I meditated, I ate, and went to bed with the sunset and rose with the sunrise. And in addition to giving me undistracted time to work, the silence also gave me another gift. Lao Tzu says, "When there is silence, one finds the anchor of the universe within oneself." In silence, one finds the anchor of the universe within oneself. So what is the anchor of the universe? Well, I began to glimpse it as my mind calmed and I became more present. And also as I reconnected with nature and the towering redwoods of that area. That anchor is what we find when, as Palmer says, we walk quietly into the woods, we sit patiently at the base of a tree, we breathe with the earth and fade into our surroundings. And as we become more attuned to our deeper nature, we begin to hear our true inner voice and what I like to call our ground of being. But back to mundanity, because we can only be there so long, right? The first morning, I ate a banana with almond butter for breakfast. And I noticed how, rather than being present with each bite, as I was chewing one mouthful, I was already thinking about the next bite, how much almond butter would go on it, whether it would drip like this bite did, whether I would catch it in time, and where the tissues were to clean up the mess. And then I realized I was completely missing the amazing rich taste of the ripe banana and almond butter that I was eating in that moment. But don't we often do that in life? We're in one moment, but actually we're already thinking about the next. Too often we're racing on to the next thing as if the now is not enough. We completely miss what that very moment, the now, right here, right now, is bringing us. And in an instant, life and all its amazing experiences just whiz by. Yet as I age, I become more cognizant of the gift of life. It's a gift that expires all too quickly, and we don't know when that's going to happen. Anyone else feel that way? Only one. I know I would feel regret on my deathbed if I let these precious moments pass me by, and this will happen if I'm not present. And that will happen if I'm always thinking about the next thing, the next task, the next moment, feeling the rush and the push of life. How many of you have been thinking about what you're doing after the service, during the service? Now, don't worry, I won't ask for hands this time. But don't feel bad, because it's natural to be so future-oriented. Yet it often stops us from really connecting to and feeling alive in this moment. So back to the banana. The next mouthful I took, I decided to become fully aware of chewing that bite. Not think about the next one. Instead, mindfully savor every delicious moment of that morsel of banana and almond butter. And it was good. I noticed how the banana got squished by my teeth, how soft the banana became in seconds of chewing, and how indescribably sweet and delicious that combination was. If you haven't tried it, I recommend it. Some pieces of almond butter actually got stuck in my teeth, and I observed how long it actually took to chew up that one bite. And then as I swallowed it, I even noticed that my heart started racing a little from the sugar in that banana. Now remember, I hardly eat any sugar, so a ripe banana is like a sugar injection. I actually felt the effect of that food on my body instantly, and that was wild. Now you might say, who cares about really tasting every bit of a banana? Who cares about becoming mindful to banana's effects on the body? Hey, it's a banana. It's not some junk food. Okay, so you have a point. But the gift I got from slowing down and becoming mindful was to deeply experience life in a whole different way. To truly savor this miraculous fruit's uniqueness, its taste, and its impact on my body. It has never tasted so good. And interestingly, I also noticed when I'd had enough, and surprisingly, that was only about after half a banana. Now, normally I just keep eating until it was done without having any awareness of how it was impacting my body. Like many of you, when I was raised, we were always taught, finish your food, right? And one banana is really not too much for breakfast, according to my mind. But as I sat digesting my half banana, I realized I felt full and had had enough in that moment. And this kind of awareness in our bodies is like having the automatic shut-off valve at the gas pump. It simply tells you, I'm full enough, don't top off. I don't need any more, I'm good. Tank's full, feeling nourished. So I stopped. I slowed down and I began reflecting. Imagine if we related to all our consumption that way. What if we really became aware of what we actually need and don't need in any moment? What if we were more conscious of food and the other things we consume mindlessly and how they impact our bodies, our minds, our economy, as well as our earth? How might that kind of awareness change or inspire our actions? We might naturally begin to work to save our planet from the climate crisis, or become more conscious of overeating, or even perhaps lose weight in the process. What I also noticed in the pace of silence was a feeling of wholeness. Perhaps that's why Parker Palmer's book is called A Hidden Wholeness. The ground of being resting underneath all, like the deep calm of the ocean floor that stays still underneath the ever-moving surface. It's there inside us all if we just make space to notice it. So as I tapped into that deep inner calm, I was able to feel the sacredness of life that I all too easily overlook in my day-to-day. Parker Palmer says we all have an inner teacher whose guidance is more reliable than anything we can get from a doctrine, ideology, collective belief system, institution, or leader. So I'm not going to tell you what your inner teacher wants for you. It's up to you to listen. But I'm curious. What has your inner teacher been showing you lately? Have you made space to tap into that silence and found your ground of being? Spiritual practices such as time and meditation, reflection, nature, and stillness help us anchor and ground ourselves. They allow the wild creature of our soul to put in an appearance. And from that place, we can go out to do our work in the world with an open heart and a strong back. The entrepreneur and executive coach Jerry Colonna says that to make a real difference in the world, we need to have both. We need to have an open heart to be moved to care for others and to connect deeply. An open heart that is developed during undefended times. But we also need a strong back to be able to face the challenges out there in the world with courage. And boy, there are plenty of challenges calling for our courage and engagement, aren't there? Much work to be done in the world that requires our courage, persistence, and strength. And I know that particularly now, with all of these frightening things happening in our world, we as adults and the children here amidst us need to cultivate that open heart and strong back to be able to model this to the people that need it so badly. I know that as your minister, I would burn out and not be able to do my work as well if I didn't intentionally nourish my soul like this on a regular basis. So I ask you again, how is your balance between your inner and outer work? Are you finding and connecting with the depths of your being so that you can open your heart and strengthen your back? Are you finding your hidden wholeness? Are you nourishing your own soul so that your work in the world is coming from a deeper place of wisdom and reflection, an authentic place within you, as Etty Hillesum called on us to do? The world longs for a more conscious, internal life from us so that we do less damage to the external world with our unconscious, reactive behavior. So much of the damage we see comes from that unconscious, reactive place. So we need to do our work so that we don't damage the world in the same way. So my friends, thank you for your support of my break. It was invaluable. It not only helped me renew, but it gave me the chance to listen within, open my heart further, and grow my insight. It has strengthened my courage for the work of justice and inspired my service to this community. I'm excited about the racial justice work we plan to undertake as a congregation this year, working to create a more equitable world for all. And my passion for climate care has been deeply fueled by being more connected to nature. And above all, I'm looking forward to our fourth year together, growing our spiritual courage as we collectively expand our capacity for justice and compassion. I invite us all to seek that spiritual sweet spot where we balance the inner and the outer, reflection with action, spirit with experience. That place where the wild animal of our soul can make an appearance. The sweet spot where our hearts are so nourished that they overflow with love for others, and what better thing than love to counter hate? The place where our bodies are strengthened so our strong backs help us face life's trials with courage and resilience. I leave you with the words of our Unitarian forefather, Henry David Thoreau. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. May we go to the woods and find the pace of silence. And may that silence nourish us and inspire us to serve. And may it guide us to live the bright promise glowing deep within each of us. May it be so. Amen. So I invite